The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Okay, Donald Trump just made the Arab countries in the Middle East an insane proposition. You ready? Because it's just so ridiculous. The gall he had to ask Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Qatar to, you ready, take responsibility for their own land. I know, it's crazy, right? I mean, why would you even think that? The Western world has not only assumed the role of Middle Eastern steward for exactly 100 years ago this coming November, but we're thinking about going for another 100 years. I welcome this plan. The Trump administration has proposed a plan to the Arab Gulf nations for them to provide funding and troops that would stabilize and patrol Western Syria. Wait a minute. Instead of us being bogged down there? Shut up. It doesn't just stop there. National Security Advisor John Bolton has also contacted Egypt to ask them to lend their support as well. Now, I don't know if we can continue to look at this, because we might see the beginning of a coalition of nations in the Middle East that actually live in the Middle East. This plan has a long way to go before it bears fruit, and there's a lot of questions to be asked, but the Trump administration is actually looking at options that scale back our ridiculously overstretched military. Our men and women in uniform are exhausted. And you know what? It's time we bring them home. They've been in near constant combat in this region for 17 years. It is well past time for the people that call this region home to take the reins. Since 2011, the Arab nations have been relatively non-existent in the Syrian crisis. They don't care. And I know what you're thinking. They didn't lend a hand militarily, but at least they took care of the refugees, right? No. Surprising. Again, another shocker, but no. If you leave out Jordan, Iraq, and Lebanon, everyone else, the Saudis, Qatar, Oman, UAE, Bahrain, they have contributed zero support for the Syrian refugees. Zero. They don't care. So this is where the trouble comes. You think they're going to stand for the Christians? No. They won't even stand for the Muslims. But the truth is, the Arab nations have grown comfortable knowing that somebody else is always going to take care of their problems. It's like a person living on, you know, welfare their entire life. Why work when you get something for free? It's high time we broke this 100-year cycle, because it doesn't work. It is time for us to get out, and it is way beyond time that people that live in the Middle East take responsibility for their own home and neighborhood.
It's Tuesday, April 17th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, welcome to the program, and let's say hello to Steve Regeer, otherwise known as Stu, our executive producer. Hello, Stu.
Glenn, how are you?
Very good, very good. I went to Starbucks this morning. Thank goodness there were all white people there.
Oh, you know what I mean? That's the only reason I go to an establishment, I'll tell you that.
That's right. I was in Starbucks, and I saw the no colors sign, and I thought, you did? Wow, that's...
What year were you in Starbucks?
It was,
before Starbucks existed, probably.
1955. But I thought, okay, now there's a sign that that really, you know, puts the policy of Starbucks right out in the open. No coloreds allowed here.
I don't remember seeing that sign at all at a Starbucks.
Huh. You would think there has been that sign someplace.
You would, because we're supposed to boycott it now. Hashtag boycott Starbucks is the new thing.
Uh-huh.
And
I'm so... I got up this morning, and I have to tell you the truth. I got up this morning, and I thought, I am freaking outraged. It has been 2 days, 2 days since I have had something new to be outraged about.
Mm.
And I was so outraged that I wasn't outraged. But I'm glad that Starbucks has provided the ability for me to be outraged today.
They have. And it all stems from this incident in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was,
yes,
two African-American individuals,
uh-huh,
came into a Starbucks right there.
Right.
You know there's,
yeah,
going to be a problem because Starbucks, yeah, is so racist.
Well, every joke starts with two guys walk into a Starbucks. But this is no joke. Don't laugh.
So they go in and they say they want to use the bathroom.
Yes.
And the person, surely white, worked at Starbucks, reminded them that their policy was,
uh-huh,
that they were not allowed to use the bathroom.
All right.
Why?
No,
because they're
coloreds.
Black. No, not because they're black, but because they hadn't purchased anything. They had this idea that only paying customers would be able to use the restroom.
Oh, man, I got to tell you this. That never happens in the places where white people go.
No,
you know what I mean? I walk into any establishment anywhere and I say, hey, I need to use your bathroom. And they say, oh, you're white. It's right over there, sir.
Yes, that is the...
Every time.
That's the way it works for us whiteies.
Yes, it does.
So they're not happy with that. They decide to, after they go to the bathroom, which it seems like they actually did go to the bathroom. In the restaurant, in the actual bathroom.
Wait, okay. In the restroom, not in the floor. Okay, yes.
And then they came back out and they sat down and said they were going to wait for a friend. Now, they did, mm-hmm, not purchase anything.
Oh, boy.
Now, if you've ever been to a Starbucks or
you
another...
You know how they have a two pricing system. One that is outrageous for any kind of minority and so cheap that you could buy something for a dollar... And then just sit there and be legitimate. But that's only for white people.
No.
For any minority, sometimes these people have to take out loans. It's $10,000 for a cup of coffee.
Same price for everyone.
Wait a minute.
But they decided they didn't want to pay any price for anything.
Hang on. We're talking Starbucks here.
We are.
Huh.
The racist Starbucks with this long... swirling history of racism.
Yes.
This deep,
mm-hmm,
Look, they're known. The Starbucks used to have 3 K's in it. I'll tell you that much.
Wow.
It used to have 3 K's in it.
I
they changed
the
that
day.
To hide it.
All the baristas had hoods.
So the guys sit down. They say they're waiting for a friend.
Mm-hmm.
The people at the restaurant who have told them they were not allowed to go to the bathroom, mm-hmm, and were not allowed to sit down unless they purchased something,
mm-hmm,
call the police. Now, the police come and, mm-hmm, handcuff the guys and remove them. At about that time, their friend actually shows up.
Mm.
So,
I hope an attorney. No, I don't hope. Al Sharpton. I hope it was Al Sharpton that showed up and saw this travesty.
Now, what has resulted from this incident,
uh-huh,
is hashtag boycott Starbucks.
Uh-huh.
And someone, a great photo,
mm-hmm,
of this Starbucks with a protester in line at the Starbucks with a megaphone in the face of an employee, screaming at the employee who is standing there straight-faced behind the counter,
mm-hmm,
with having absolutely nothing to do with this incident. Surely he's just trying to sell people lattes.
You know, you try to make this, mm-hmm, sound like the baristas are just these innocent people that are just going up every day to do their job. When you know darn well they are some of the most racist organizers of all of the Klan.
I know that. Of course. So now we step back here and look at this incident for a moment, if we may,
okay,
if we must.
All right.
Because
we have a store that claims they don't hang up signs that say coloreds only. No bathroom for coloreds. We have a story here that is trying to say that they don't allow whites to use the restroom if they don't purchase anything. They're trying to tell us that there's no two pricing system, one for minorities, one for whites.
Mm-hmm.
And now remember, we're pretending here that all the baristas are not organizers for the Klan.
Right.
Okay.
So
we've
established all these crazy lines I've come up with.
Right.
We could talk about this. Boycotting Starbucks, yelling at them. Start here. Let's say there was an employee at Starbucks who was racist. Okay. And they came out and they said, sir or madam, you must be removed from this restaurant because you're black. And I'm going to call the police and have them come handcuff you because I don't want black people in my restaurant. What should be the response to that? The employee should absolutely be fired.
Sure.
Probably breaking multiple laws as well.
Yeah. Mr. Starbucks would be pissed because he's a progressive.
Right. He's very much a progressive.
Yes.
But let's just say it was this person was racist. Would this mean that you should boycott Starbucks? Can we start there? Because the way you started this, I think, is the perfect way.
Mm-hmm.
Are we addicted to outrage?
Yes, we are.
Are we addicted to outrage? Because we stand here and we look at a story like this, and our immediate idea is to act as if this is the entire corporate policy. That Starbucks, they're having meetings in Seattle, of all places, and they're all deciding what we're going to do is call the police on black people who want to use the restroom. We all, even if it was a case in which there was a hood-wearing employee that they had hired that was trying to discriminate against black people, this obviously is not the corporate policy of Starbucks, okay? There is not a pattern of behavior at Starbucks in which they are constantly in the news for throwing black people out of restaurants. In fact, the exact opposite.
Stu's fantasy world again.
The exact opposite seems to be the case in which there's this incredibly progressive company that makes all sorts of annoying political stances to make everyone feel good about their lack of prejudice, about how wonderfully open-minded they are. That is their actual pattern of behavior. So there is absolutely no reason to boycott this restaurant, to boycott this this entire chain of restaurants. And because we are addicted to outrage, it is all about us. We want to think that we're doing something.
Well, no.
We want to take steps that we've changed something, that it's all about us.
I definitely want to stop a coffee place that wants all blacks in jail. They think all black men belong in jail. I heard it from Black Lives Matter.
Right. They don't want that. There's no evidence
sure
they want that.
Black Lives Matter just going to say that?
There's no pattern of behavior that supports that. But beyond that, now let's take another step back. Is there any evidence whatsoever that this incident had anything to do at any time with race?
No.
Is this guy on his, whoever, whatever manager is, are they on their Facebook page posting racist memes? Did they say anything about race at any point?
So here
are you trying to tell me that there has not been a white person who's been removed from a restaurant because
They
wouldn't pay for something. They would sit down. Now,
that's called loitering.
Of course, since this happened, people have posted many times where people have been removed from Starbucks and other places that were white because they didn't listen to the person who was running the store. How many times have we seen the sign, no shirt, no shoes, no service, right? What happens in that situation if you try to come in with no shirt and no shoes? The manager would try to remove you. What if you just sat down, though? What if you had no shirt and no shoes and you just sat down at a table? What would they do? Now, there's probably about 80% of managers who would roll their eyes and get angry and not do anything because they were afraid their restaurant chain would be boycotted if they did something. However, they would have the right at that point, because you were violating the rules of the restaurant, to call the police. The police don't have to listen to the manager, by the way. Police don't have to come in and say, okay, well, we agree, we're going to remove this person. They don't have to.
No, it's corporate police.
The corporate police did that.
You don't understand. They all listen to the corporations. Boy, Stu, you're so misguided.
I guess I'm.
Now, here's why history is really important in this.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, once upon a time, there was this guy. He was a reverend. He was also a doctor. He was a reverend doctor, Martin Luther King. And in his day, black people were asked to leave restaurants because the only reason they were black. They would sit at a lunch counter where everyone else was being served, and no waiter would come and serve them. Not because they didn't have money, not because they weren't being polite. They sat there just like every other customer, and they were polite. They were respectful. They dressed like all the other customers. They did everything to fit in, except they were black. They had a reason to stand or to sit at that counter. They had a reason to protest, because they weren't being served solely because they're black. They wanted to pay for their meal, and they just wanted to be recognized as a human being. We have now so distorted what Martin Luther King and what civil rights actually mean that now people are walking in and claiming luxuries that no one else gets without paying for the product. They're demanding luxuries. And I know, well, I've got to go to the bathroom. Yes. And they have a right to say you have to be a paying customer. Otherwise, they don't have bathrooms for all the paying customers because people are coming in because no one provides restrooms for non-customers. We really need to learn history, because we are perverting, or it's already been done. The sane people of America, both left and right, need to recognize how far away from the actual civil rights movement we are, and we need to calmly and rationally remind people. There was a deep problem in America. In some cases, there still is, and we have a long way to go. But we progress. We get better. But we're not going to get better. We're going to get worse if people demand extra things only because of their race. When they demand and everybody kowtows to one race over another because they have the power not to lift up, but to destroy, that is going to cause even more divisions in our country. And we can play no role in it. Liberty Safe, the safes that are all built here in America. They build every Cabela's safe. In fact, they're becoming such a brand name that the people are going into Cabela's and they're saying, no, I want the one that says Liberty on it. And they're like, well, no, it's the same safe, except it says Cabela's. No, I want the one that says Liberty on it. Liberty Safe, they're made here in America, and they are the best built safes on the planet. They are really, really good. We have seen all kinds of demonstrations over the last 10 years of dropping a competitor's safe, they're really heavy, on a Liberty. Doesn't dent, doesn't open. We've seen them in fires. The contents are still good, even though only thing that remains of the house is the chimney. Everything else is burned down to the ground. It's the chimney and the Liberty safe. We've seen them picked up by tornadoes and dropped a block or two away from their original place. Still closed. Liberty Safe, you want to make sure that nothing happens to the property that you care about or your guns and nobody gets in but you. You get a Liberty Safe. And right now you can get it at a great price. 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer Liberty Safes for as low as $20 a month. Liberty Safe. Go to libertysafe.com right now. That's libertysafe.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Let me take Ross quickly. He may have a substitute outrage for me. Go ahead, Ross.
Yes, Stu's wrong about something about Starbucks. There's one thing that Starbucks consistently has a microtransaction, a transgression against, okay. And a racist attitude towards is spelling people's names right. For example, my wife's name is Cammie. How do you get Gabby out of that? So I think we need to do a hashtag wow. Spell my name right, or hashtag put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for the outrage. Now, I don't use Starbucks, so I can't get around it. I can't find. I need something to really be outraged by today. You know,
well, you can't get
the Cohen thing. Eh.
You can't get through a day without outrage. That's the only thing that fuels us.
This is the way that America lives now. You were addicted to outrage, and I need my fix. Now, I have a possible contender. And it may sound like a joke, but believe me, it's not. I'm going to share that one next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, I'm going to try to remain calm and collected. And maybe it is just me, but I don't think it is. And I know this is an old joke, but this is no joke. I am not joking. This is not this funny monologue on Apple. No, this is not a funny monologue. This is a dead serious monologue on Apple cords. I want answers. And if I were in Congress, I would call a congressional hearing on why Apple refuses to make a cord that just acts like a regular cord for any other device. They have reimagined our entire world. They have made our life so easy. It's such an amazing product until you go to charge it. Now, if you have a little charger station, that's fantastic. I love those little charger stations. Now, for those of us humans that use our phones or our devices all the time and we need to plug them in, I don't know. I need a plug that is a little longer than 3 feet. Now, I know you're thinking to yourself, Glenn, they sell them at the Apple store. Do they? Okay, what they do is they hire some other company to make cords and then they approve them. Although I have recently purchased 3 separate cords, all from the Apple store, and they work for a while until they don't. I'd like one that actually works like a cord. I'd like to not have to stand in line at the frickin' Apple store for a cord. And I know the people behind the counter would like to stop seeing me. I'd like to know why. Why they can't make a cord longer than my arm. Now, a lot of people, I think probably most people, sit on the floor right next to the baseboard and the outlet when they're reading or, just surfing the web or doing their work, whatever it is you're doing with an Apple product. I know most people sit right at the outlet. I don't. Now, white privilege, sure. Here at the office, I have a radio desk that we built with a plug at my station. Do you know why? Because behind me, about, I'd say that's 5 feet away, there is an outlet. But that's far too far away for an Apple plug. So, white privilege, we all have plugs either in our bed, or we have a plug in the nightstand, or we have a plug in our desks. But that's just white people. I don't know why they can't make a plug longer than my arm, because I am usually more than arm's length away from the outlet. This has been the bane of my frickin' existence since I started using Apple, and they're not getting better. Now, I've purchased the new plug. It didn't work. It worked for a while, and then it stopped working.
Yeah, it's about 3 weeks over under on a plug that's not an Apple plug. I feel like weeks is about the length of time to get out of them.
But I mean not an Apple plug that you bought at the Apple store. I understand if you just try to, you're just trying to find a plug that fits, you know, at a Target. I get it. You got to go to Apple to get it, you know, because that's the most convenient thing for you. I'm talking about the ones you buy at Apple.
Right.
But are not made by Apple.
But about 3 weeks over under on that, would you say?
Yeah.
About 3 weeks, because it does seem to work initially.
Yes, and it does. Then it stops working.
Before the calendar turns. You're back at the Apple store buying another
I buy them in bulk.
We should point out that these are not just cords that you buy at the Apple store. They are, let's say, 6 foot cords made by other companies that charge you $59 for the cord.
Yeah.
The cord is never, it's not an irrational human amount that you pay for a power cord.
Of course not. This is an Apple price.
It's $59 for a 6 foot cord.
Sure. Okay. So you have a 6 foot cord. Now, this is the third time in the last 2.5 months that I have purchased a cord. In fact, I thought it can't be the cord. It's got to be my iPad. So I went out and I bought a new iPad because I thought for sure it had to be the iPad. And the geniuses behind the counter were wrong because they were like, no, there's nothing wrong with the iPad. Well, I just bought my third cord, so it must be either the cord. No, it's not the cord. It seems to work. I know, it's weird. It works sometimes. It doesn't work all the time, but it always works here when you plug it in. Weird, isn't it? So I buy another iPad. This is my second iPad now in about a month. Ah, what a surprise. It's not working. If Steve Jobs were in my house yesterday and alive, you'd be mourning his death again today. I can't take it anymore because it's not just the cord. It's not just the cord that is short. Have you ever used one of these newfangled devices called a vacuum?
Oh, I've heard of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you know how you plug a vacuum in. Okay. And then there's always a place in the room that you're vacuuming that's just a little too far away from the cord, but you're so lazy. You know, when you were a kid, you were like, I want to vacuum the living room and the hallway, and I'm too lazy to unplug the damn thing. And so you just try to get it, and you're stretching the cord to its maximum length, and you just about have it. And then finally that cord, which is really, really taut and kind of coming through two doorways, and you're like, and you got to go back and plug it in.
Or that's when you stop vacuuming.
That's what I did, but my mom's dead now, so I can admit that. Anyway, you know the cord thing?
Yeah.
Okay. That seemed to have some give to it. It had staying power. You have a 3 foot cord and you move your iPad just slightly too far, like a quarter of an inch too far, the plug falls out. These plugs have zero staying power.
They're like not built to stay in the outlet.
No, it's not like they're built for American outlets. I don't know what kind of outlets they're built for, but not American outlets. Now, you can't use them in Europe or any place else because they look like they're supposed to work in American outlets, but they never stay in. I have a power strip that I've had to take my extension cord and bring it out and then tape it to the side of my nightstand, okay? It's nicely done. It's beautiful. Tape it to the nightstand. So the plug is there. It's right there at the nightstand. Well, God forbid I want to read my book and roll over. About 60% of the time I roll over and the damn plug falls out. It's right there. Sometimes I don't even have to move. Sometimes just in the middle of the night, I get up and there's no charge on my iPad. Oh, why? Yeah. Because the plug has fallen out of the wall. Like there was maybe a stiff wind in the middle of the night, or the alarm clock when it went off. it was causing too much of vibration and a shimmy on the table. And so the plug fell out. I have no idea what the hell is going on, but I just want an answer. I just want, why? Why? You can even say, because we hate people, actually, and it's our way to show them, you know, you're so stupid. We thought you'd never pay $1,000 for a phone, but look what we've made you do. You go out and you buy a $1,000 phone. You'll wait in line. There's no reason to wait in line anymore. We make you do it because we think you're a bunch of rubes. And you know what? You did all those things. So we said, hey, you know what they won't put up with? just a ridiculously short cord that won't even stay in the wall socket. And yet you still pay $1,000 for a phone. I'll accept that answer from you. I just want an answer because I'm beginning to think that Steve Jobs is alive. He's just being held hostage by some ridiculously bad communist cord company that is like, I swear to you, if you stop selling our cords, we kill him. We kill him. And I mean it. We're going to kill him. And if that's the case, let them kill him. Let them kill him.
We've please. Already kind of mourned that
We've
one.
Moved yeah. on from him. It's okay. Let him go. We need a cord that works.
And the only thing that would make your frustration worse is the 500 tweets that I have received about how other people have purchased cords not from the Apple Store that work perfectly
Shut
well.
Shut up. Don't write to me and say, oh, this one works. No, it doesn't. It never works for me. None of them. I've got literally a drawer full of cords that do not work for my Apple products. If they work for you, good. Give me your address. I'll send one to you. They don't work in my household for some reason. Don't even write. Unless you're writing from Apple with an explanation. All right. Let me tell you about American financing. Refinance your mortgage. Now is the time to do it. Maybe you don't want to start a 30-year loan again. Well, American Financing can help. They can eliminate your mortgage insurance, lower your rate, and consolidate your high interest debt. And you don't have to worry about resetting your loan because American Financing, they work for you, not for the bank. So they're not, trying to give you a cookie cutter loan. They will offer a 9, a 13, or 18-year loan, any term that you really need. It's a custom loan. So choose the term based on your budget, and they'll find the most competitive interest rate. It's a mortgage your way. And with a fixed rate, no matter where interest rates goes, yours stays the same. Monthly payments will not increase. One call to the salary-based mortgage consultants, and they're going to guide you through the options and will customize the right program to achieve your financial goals. It's American Financing. Call them now at 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440 or online at AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Oh, everybody solved this but me, huh? Oh, yeah. No.
Glenn Beck.
I'm serious. I think duct tape works. I'm just going to duct tape it to the wall. So all I'm going to do is take that Apple cord and I'm going to duct tape it to the wall.
A lot of people are suggesting wonderful alternatives, yeah. Glenn. A lot right. of people have had yeah, really good luck.
Yeah, with?
Well, Amazon Basics, and a lot of people suggesting that because they have their own sort of line of batteries and cords and things like that.
And it works for an Apple product.
That's what it says. It's they're obviously a lot cheaper as well.
Oh,
I will say I have had the same problem. I just bought the ridiculous because I had the same thing. It kept not working. And it was one of those issues where you look at your iPhone when it's charging, and it's just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
It's sitting there like as still as can be
mm-hmm.
on a flat surface.
Yeah, that's
and you look at it and you're watching it,
uh-huh.
and you just see it go zzz, zzz, zzz. And what is that? What's happening is it's somehow. Actually unplugging itself and plugging itself back in.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
gaining and losing the connection
yes.
in front of your eyes.
Yeah, in real time, not moving. Yeah.
And then, you know what always happens is mm-hmm. when you charge it next to your bed, mm-hmm. it goes zzz, 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 and it drives you crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you fall asleep. And you know what happens once you fall asleep? It finally stops. You know where it stops? On the not charging option.
Yes.
So then yes. your alarm doesn't go off.
Right.
And you wake up with a phone that has no batteries in it.
Yeah.
Charged.
Boy, have I lived there.
Yes.
I've got my alarm. I fixed that. I've got my alarm. It actually goes off, but no matter what I do, it will not make sound.
Oh.
So when I wake up naturally, it's just showing, hit the snooze or cancel. Hit the snooze or cancel. Yeah, no need now. It's been going off for an hour and a half, but it didn't make a sound. Not a single sound. I've turned up the volume. I've done everything. Love it. love it.
Now, this may be operator error.
That one may be.
Probably
but I can't figure it out. My wife can't figure it out.
But I mean, should at least try. There's two ways to go. Buy the super pricey cord, which I attempted at Apple, which looks like a rope.
You always think, well, Apple just will want the super pricey one.
Right. Like my thought is maybe I'm not paying Apple enough.
Did you get the Apple rope?
So I got the one that looks like a rope.
Yeah.
That is like, you know, $50.
Yeah.
And it's like 8 feet long.
Uh-huh.
And it worked for about 6 days and then it stopped working.
The rope one did.
The rope one did.
The nice thing about the rope one, for no extra money, you can fashion it into a noose. So
it's true. It's something I may attempt soon.
Yeah. Well, I'm there.
The other way to buy, like, for example, I was just on the Amazon Basics site. They have a 24-pack. So let's say you're getting 3 weeks out of each one. I mean, then you're out to 72 weeks.
Seriously, a 24-pack, isn't that just a sign of failure? It's just a sign the company's like, yeah, they only last about 3 weeks. Let's sell them as bundles.
But again, if you just throw it out, you're probably still paying less than one Apple cord.
I'm fine. I really am fine with it. I'm even fine with my wife, her little Apple cord. It's so frayed, you can actually see the wires. That damn thing is still working. And I'm fine. If it would fray, I'd be like, okay, well, you know, it's just being used all the time. Like it's supposedly designed to do. But I would still be like, okay, maybe there's something there. Maybe, you know, at night I get up in the middle of the night and I've got a little file and I'm filing down the rubber coating or something.
Mm-hmm.
I would be okay with that. I'm not okay with treating it better than I treat my children or my dogs. Like, lay it out. Are you okay? Okay, you're going to go. I'm going to just set you right here. I'm just going to be really gentle with you. And no. Can I get you something? Do you need anything? Want a snack? I mean, I treat that cord like it's the most important thing in the world, and it still doesn't work.
Well, if you're being that creepy to the cord, maybe it's playing dead. Just hoping you throw it away so it can get away from you.
Yeah.
Look, and you could say, hey, I've got a Samsung, right? I don't even have an iPhone. I don't even have an iPad. Why do I want to hear some guy talk about his iPad for a half an hour? You want us talking about James Comey? You want to hear more about Stormy Daniels? Is that what you want?
We could.
Because we could go on about that.
We could.
You know, we'll shoot ourselves before the end of the segment, but we could Stormy Daniels for at least a minute or two before
that
happens.
Hey, he's got the Apple rope cord. We could hang ourselves.
It's like, looking at the news, man, I don't even know. I'd rather, these are real problems. You know, we can talk all about porn stars.
These are ones that I would think we could fix.
That one should be solvable. Yeah. I don't understand. The whole point of the company is that we make things easy. It's ergonomically designed. Everything
works.
I
don't know how they're the most beloved company on the earth. They suck. They suck. They really do. As people, they suck. They're treating us like dogs. Go stand in line.
Glenn,
go stand in
Beck,
line.
Mercury.
So we have news of another big data breach. It was recently reported that hackers stole information from more than 5 million credit and debit cards used for in-store purchases at Saks Fifth Avenue, Saks Off Fifth, and Lord & Taylor stores. Some of the card information was put up for sale on the dark web as soon as the breach went viral. There are so many threats in today's connected world, and it takes just one weak link for criminals to get in. Good thing that the new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds the power of Norton Security to help protect you against threats to your identity and your devices that you can't easily see or fix on your own. I don't think they can fix problems with your power cords, but they can fix this. If you have a problem, they have agents who will work to do just that. No one can stop every cyber threat, prevent all identity theft, or monitor transactions at all businesses. But new LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover threats you might otherwise miss. Go to LifeLock.com or 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code BECK for an additional 10% off your first year. That's promo code BECK for an additional 10% off at LifeLock.com.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
In several states, the women of the number of women who die after giving birth has been on the rise in America for the past 15 years. The uptick in maternal mortality rates has baffled experts, doctors, healthcare professionals. They have no idea what's going on. Now, one of the theories is that it's tied to the growing opioid crisis and drug overdoses, as well as an unexplainable increase of suicides among women who have just given birth. We don't know. They have concluded that recent cuts to Planned Parenthood are not the cause. How could they be? The rates have been increasing for the last 15 years. But Minnesota Democratic Representative Keith Ellison wants you to know that the experts are wrong, and we need to stop looking for actual medical, scientific reasons, because Republicans are murdering these women. His latest rant at an event hosted by the Progressive Change Campaign Committee.
Did you know that in Missouri and in Texas and maybe other places, maternal mortality has risen? Women are dying because we are losing elections. We don't have the right to lose a damn election. Mm. We have to win.
Unfortunately, in America in 2018, facts and empirical data don't often pass as truth anymore. Narrative has become the truth, and that narrative is always tied to winning. The narrative of the day holds Republicans and Trump out as the villains who are now killing women. Villains who are out to harm women and kill them by cutting funds to Planned Parenthood, the organization responsible for roughly 300,000 killings of children every year. I would guess those would be pretty harmful, certainly for the child, but also for the mother. But that's just another fact that doesn't fit the narrative.
It's Tuesday, April 17th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Rand Paul just came out and said that he doesn't think that those chemical weapons were used by Assad.
Did he say that?
He said Assad would have to be the dumbest person on the planet because he knew that the rest of the world would turn against him. So there's only two choices. He's either that stupid or it wasn't him. Okay, Rand. All right. I'm disturbed by the growing number of people who, and I'm not putting Rand in this, I'll let Rand speak for himself.
I think he's on with us tomorrow, is it?
Is he? Good.
He's on this week with us, I think.
I'd like to talk to him about that. But, you know, there is a history of Russia duping people. I don't know if you know that. I want to talk a little bit about that, but I want to come in through a side door that... No, most people, most Americans don't even remember anymore. Chappaquiddick. Mary Jo Kopechne, just about a week ago or a few days ago, we had her relatives on with us for about half an hour. They're going to come down and spend some more time with us because their voice has not been heard on a national stage until now. And we talked to them about Mary Jo Kopechne, the young staffer that was left to die in a car by Senator Ed Kennedy, and wanted to know who she really was and what is the truth.
She idealized Bobby, and that was the only thing that brought her out of the South. She was down South during the civil rights days, and we were very worried about her teaching school in Alabama. But when she had the opportunity to work in Washington with the people who were making the rules, making the laws, and making things better for everyone and equal rights, she came right up to Washington.
Yeah, she was a speechwriter for Bobby, right?
She helped him write his speech announcing he was going to run for president. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, she was smart. Yeah. Well, she was one of the older boiler room girls, too, though.
The one thing we all walked out of this movie saying is, how did she not get out and he did? Is there any...
Oh, my God.
Are there any thoughts on this?
I wish I knew that. Mary Jo was a wonderful swimmer. And if she had... her face couldn't have been more than a foot from air, even though she was inside the car trying to breathe the air that was in there. Why didn't she get out?
If you want my opinion...
Go ahead, Bill.
If you want my opinion on it, when they did the inquest, there was blood that went down the back of her blouse, probably to the small of her back. they dismissed it as some sort of nonsense, as foam from her mouth. But I always wondered that. Why didn't she get out of the car? And I personally think that she was injured inside that car, and she may not have been all the way conscious either. I think instinctually, when John Farrar pulled her out of the car, instinctually, she had found an air pocket up by what would be the foot hole, because it was, the car was upside down, so it would be where you would put your feet. That's a question that's puzzled us for years, and we don't have a lot of answers about Chappaquiddick, but what we've done is we'll give you who Mary Jo was. So we can tell you what probably didn't happen. For instance, this rumor about her being in an affair with Ted Kennedy. There's a good chance that that never happened because of who Mary Jo was and her upbringing and her Catholic and her values and things like that. So when you find out what didn't happen, it kind of leads you down the path of what possibly could happen. And I wish more people would do that, that were there or that know things. I wish more people would come forward with whatever little pieces of information that they may have, and that at least we know are fact.
These girls all came together because they had scattered, and this was their last chance to see each other. Bobby had died. A few of them, including Mary Jo, had been chosen to clean up the office and things to the museums and things home, send things to the office. It was a very tragic task for them because they had loved the senator. And so this was a chance for them to be together. But no one has ever come to Gwen and Joe and said, I saw Mary Jo, she was happy, we were looking forward to this or that. And so they've never had the last few hours of their daughter's life. And I think that's a terrible tragedy.
So wait, none of the Boiler Girls ever got together with the family? And
no, they were at her funeral, but Gwen and Joe were so sedated, to tell you the truth, that and none of them were ever introduced to any of us. So we never got a chance to talk to them either. And afterward, when it was calmed down, and they thought that, now the senator will come forward and talk to them. He did call them, ask them to come to Hyannisport, and they thought, well, now we'll find out what happened that night. But when they got there, they walked into a cocktail party. He came over and said hello and disappeared.
Gosh.
And so they turned around and went home and more or less hibernated the rest of their lives. But he never, as far as I know, never even said, I'm sorry.
The name of the book is Our Mary Jo. It's available everywhere. And I haven't read it yet, but I hope that it picks the story up before and after the movie Chappaquiddick.
Yeah. Yeah, the it starts from actually her heritage and where she came from. It continues up past her death into Gwen and Joe's life without her. It's a comprehensive look. And what we did is we took all the letters that we had received from people around the world, well, Gwen and Joe had received, and we had actually inherited them. And we put them in the book to tell Mary Jo's story through the eyes of other people, through her friends, her coworkers. Now she was great, but not because we say so, but because everyone who knew her said so. So all the people surrounding her had an opportunity to go on and be lawyers and be publicists and have very successful lives. So we'd only assume Mary Jo would also have done that too. So this gives her a second chance.
The name of the book is Our Mary Jo. It is Mary Jo Kopechne's story. The name of the movie is Chappaquiddick. You need to see it. It's unbelievable. Thank you so much. Paul Kangor, he is an author of a book called Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for a Century. And I want to talk to him a little bit about how the Soviets manipulated people in Congress and the media here in just a minute. But I want to stop real quick and ask him about Senator Kennedy and the Chappaquiddick story. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Good, Glenn. Hey, thanks for having me on.
I was shocked at that interview. They've never really done a national interview before, and that nobody ever talked to the family about it. And so they kind of just, the parents just died in isolation, and nobody ever said anything. And most people don't know the story now.
Yes, no, that's exactly right. In fact, I had caught the interview at the Blaze. I saw that you had posted it there. And the, you know, the original book that I think a lot of the movie seems to be based on, I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm hoping
it's really good.
Weekend.
It's really good.
Yeah, that's what I hear. It was Leo DeMore's book, which was called Senatorial Privilege, the Chappaquiddick Cover-Up. And that came out in late 80s. And I remember at the time, I was an undergrad. I was totally apolitical. It was like a pre-med major. I had no interest in politics. And I was just flipping the channels one night. And I think it was on Larry King Live. Leo DeMore, the author, was on. And he's the guy that broke a lot of this. And his original publisher, I think it was Random House, had spiked the book after giving him a $150,000 advance, and that was after pressure from the Kennedy family. And it was Regnery that published the book. That finally came out. Leo DeMore would have a tragic end, too. He actually took his own life. In the late 1990s. But it was the first time that I heard all of that information. I went out, I got the book, I read it. And you probably know this as well as I do, at least from what we know, but she appears to have suffocated,
yeah.
Right, Glenn? I mean, I don't think she drowned.
No.
And she suffocated because there was, my understanding is that the car didn't go into Cape Cod. It went into a pond.
Yeah, it did. And the bottom of the vehicle was actually exposed, and she had just enough air. They thought that she might have lived for up to 3 hours, and help was literally steps away. He just walked away from the scene, and so nobody knew until the morning.
And he went away from the scene, or walked away, or ran away because he didn't want to get hit with drunk driving, surely, right? And had he done that, and he would have been accused of drunk driving and killing somebody in the process, that would have hurt his career. He was in line, he hoped, to be the next Kennedy who would run for president of the United States. So following JFK, following RFK, and I mean the tragedy of the Kennedy family. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated just the year before. That was in June 1968. And then you go back even a couple more Kennedy boys. JFK was assassinated, but Lee Harvey Oswald, November 63. And then there was also another Kennedy boy, Joe Jr., who some people say this was the most impressive Kennedy boy of all of them, and he got killed in World War II.
Yeah, there were tragedies that happened, but this was not one of the tragedies. This was Ted Kennedy being a bad guy.
That's right.
You know, you can't link this to the Kennedy curse. This one happened because Ted Kennedy did it. I want to stop there. We're talking to Paul Kangor. He's the author of Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Manipulated Progressives for Over a Century. I want to take a quick break and come back and talk to Paul. He's a political science professor and has written extensively on history. And we go back to Ted Kennedy and his relationship with the Soviet Union and how he was, I think, willingly duped by the Soviet Union, and how this has happened before. And I think, Paul, and I'd love to hear your opinion, it's happening to members of the press and members on the right and the left right now in Syria with Russia. We go there next. Every business needs great people and a better way to find them. Something better than posting your job online and praying for the right person just to show up. ZipRecruiter knew there had to be a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidate for you. It learns what you're looking for. It identifies the people with the right experience and then goes out and invites them to apply to your job. And it's the invitations that change the way everything works. 80% of the people who try ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate in the first day. But it also spotlights the strongest applications you receive. So when you open up your ZipRecruiter and you look at the dashboard and you see what's coming in, it highlights all of these people so you don't miss the perfect match. It's the way you're going to find the person that you need in your business. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We go to Paul Kangor. Paul, I'm watching the news come out today where I'm watching some media people start to hold up Russia as the good guys in this battle over in the Middle East, and they are siding with Iran and Syria. You know, your allies would tell you a little bit something about if you're on the right side or not. This isn't the first time that Russia has used members of Congress or politicians or the media or people on the streets and turned them into little advocates for them, right?
Oh, that's exactly right. Yeah, the Russians are great at doing this, Glenn. I mean, they've been masters of manipulation for decades. They had a department of agitprop, agitation and propaganda. They specialized in disinformation. The Russian word for it was desinformatsiya, which is a long, clunky word, but I mention it because they practically pioneered it. I mean, they were great at learning how to work people in the American media, people in the American Congress, and they always targeted progressives because, you know, they figured progressives being on the left were far less anti-communist, they were far less anti-Russian, and those are the people that they could dupe and sucker. And in fact, it would have been Vladimir Putin's KGB. Putin was there throughout the 1980s that duped and used and hoodwinked Ted Kennedy, you know, just to carry over from our last segment in Chappaquiddick. They worked Ted Kennedy over really good a number of times in the 1970s and 1980s. And the worst example of this was when Kennedy, and we actually have now a May 14th, 1983 memo from the head of the KGB, Viktor Chebrikov. This would have been Putin's boss at the time. And it was directly addressed to the head of the Soviet Union, Yuri Andropov. Mm. And you remember, Andropov was a bad dude.
Yeah, really bad.
This was a really bad guy. And this was all about, as the actual document says, quote, regarding Senator Kennedy's request to the General Secretary of the Communist Party, Andropov. And that request, I think this fits perfectly with exactly what you're talking about. Kennedy, in this note, again, communication directly from the head of the KGB to the head of the Soviet Union, and it was communicated directly on the scene by John Tunney, who is a former Democratic senator from California. He had been a law school roommate of Ted Kennedy. And Kennedy there tells the Russians that there's this bad situation internationally where the situation is deteriorating in U.S.-Soviet relations. He's very troubled by this, but he blames it on Reagan. He doesn't blame it on the Russians. He blames it on Reagan. The memo says the problem was Reagan's belligerence, compounded by Reagan's stubbornness. And here's the exact language, Glenn. According to Kennedy, wrote Chebrikov, the current threat is due to the president's refusal to engage any modification to his politics. And so that being the case, Kennedy actually offers, and it says here, Kennedy believes that given the state of current affairs and in the interest of peace, it would be prudent and timely to undertake the following steps to counter the militaristic policies of Reagan. And among those steps, Kennedy offered to connect Andropov and the Russians and the Kremlin with sympathetic people in the American media. And the memo actually even notes Walter Cronkite and Barbara Walters as two people that the Russians could be connected to. So it kind of the moral of the story and the overarching angle here that continues to this day, the Russians always knew and always understood, and this is going on now with Syria, that if there's a Republican in the White House that they don't like and who's doing something in foreign policy that they don't like, they could always count on sympathetic people, liberals, progressives in the American media, in Congress, and in the Senate to step up and help them out to be dupes.
Paul Kangor, the name of the book is Dupes, How America's Adversaries Have Been Manipulating Progressives for a Century.
Glenn,
available now.
Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, talking about the Syrian thing, this is why it's so important for you to understand what's happening in Syria. This is not about Syria. It's really not. It's not even about the United States and Russia. It is about Israel. Hamas and Hezbollah. Hezbollah is the army of Iran. Hezbollah has come out and along with the Al-Quds fighters, which means Jerusalem, Al-Quds, Quds meaning Jerusalem, they are the armies that are being sent in from Iran. Iran sees weakness in Assad, and Assad is allowing them to come in and occupy this space, and they are trying to take and build a crescent shape Iran and trying to come over to the top of Israel. And we know this because in Syria, the commander of the Iranian troops has just said recently their action is almost complete. Their encirclement of Israel is almost complete. They have Syria, they have Lebanon, they now have Gaza as well. The protesters in Gaza sent a viral love letter out to the head general of the Al-Quds fighting brigade, which is Iranian, saying, you know, we love you, we're waiting for you, hurry soon. And the plan is to overwhelm Israel and take Jerusalem. This is in their end times theology. It happens to be in ours as well. But they believe they are enacting their end times theology. This is the way they hasten the return of the promised one. This is really about Israel. The Palestinians are being stirred up by Iran right now, and they're being used to try to penetrate the border wall in the Gaza Strip. They are causing all kinds of distress there, where a proxy war between the United States and Russia is happening, and no one is talking about Israel. Israel's 70th birthday or anniversary is right around the corner. In fact, next week, here at our studios in Las Colinas, Texas, there is a Israel 70th Celebrate the Miracle dinner that is going on. We don't open our doors for everybody, but we wanted to open our doors for this group that is celebrating the 70th birthday of Israel. I'm going to be speaking. Daniel Lappin, I think, is speaking. Rafael Cruz, I think, is speaking. If you've never heard Rafael Cruz speak, he is fantastic. But it's a dinner in support of Israel, and that is happening, I believe, is it next Thursday, April 26th? It's a cocktail reception, dinner, and then the program and dessert and everything else. You can find your tickets at HaYovel, HaYovel, yahovel.com/Israel70, or at glennbeck.com. We will point you in the right direction.
Interesting you bring up Rafael Cruz after a segment about the Kennedys.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that crazy?
Sure, that was a coincidence.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I thought you were going to say, interesting you bring up Rafael Cruz and Israel, and we're just 6 days away from the rapture.
Right, you need to get this speech in? It's more than 6 days away. Why are you bothering?
I'm probably going to stay. I mean, yeah, I'll be chosen to go, but I'm probably going to stay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. David Meade has come out and said that April 23rd, the sun and the moon will be in Virgo, as will Jupiter, which represents the Messiah.
Isn't this the same guy?
Yeah. What?
Isn't this the same guy that we had on?
Don't pay attention to that. What are you talking about?
Remember, we had the guy on who's saying that
he's somebody completely discredited. But it's a totally different guy with the same name.
Oh.
And voice.
But you haven't even heard him. How did you?
Anyway, he says that the date of the rapture is April 23rd, it's the alignment of the stars, and so expect the rapture. You don't have to pack anything because you can't. You're going as you came, but for the rest of us, we'll still be broadcasting on Friday. So
that's sad.
Yeah, or is it April 23rd? When is April 23rd? What day?
Monday.
This coming Monday?
Yeah. Oh. 6 days away.
Yeah.
There's a giant sign behind you that says Rapture Countdown 6 days. So you should know that.
Oh my gosh, there it is. Rapture Countdown 6 days. That's an internal message just so we all know.
That's not for the show?
No. Okay. That's good. Stu, I know you want to get to... I know you want to get to some politics today.
I do. There's more important things than politics, though.
But what is it?
What fossil fuels are doing to our world. You don't understand. That's not a political issue.
Is that more important than the tiger that is running amok in Manhattan?
I think they're probably related.
Give me a little bit of yours.
A green activist who was a pioneering lawyer for gay and transgender rights, including the notorious Boys Don't Cry rape murder case, committed suicide by setting himself on fire on Saturday morning in Prospect Park in Brooklyn to show how bad fossil fuels were. He burned himself to death using fossil fuels to reflect how mankind was likewise killing itself. Police sources say he left a note in a manila envelope, fireproof? Which killed trees. No, I don't think it was.
Oh, it was just away from the body?
It was just away.
Okay, all right.
So he wasn't holding on to it. It's a terrible way to
don't let this
note.
Blow into the fire. I'm going to leave this here, but don't let it blow into my fire. I'm sorry, go ahead.
My early death by fossil fuels reflects what we are doing to ourselves. It's interesting because if people really were dying because of fossil fuels, why would you need to kill yourself?
Right.
Right.
You would just say, hey, let me show you this video.
Or let me go to this area where everyone's dying of fossil fuels.
Right.
Instead, he had to set himself on fire because fossil fuels aren't doing the thing he says they're doing. A senior attorney with Lombada Legal Defense. He was a lead lawyer in a 2000 lawsuit about Boys Don't Cry. Of course, you'll remember, I know you're a big fan, Glenn, of that movie, 1999, Hilary Swank.
Oh, yeah.
Love that. Also fought for the rights of gay high school students in Salt Lake City to organize a club. He argued against discrimination in the Boy Scouts of America and the military. And then decided, the temperature's gone up by 0.9 degrees. Let's light myself on fire.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
You know, like, I feel like if you're going to light yourself on fire, we know this from the Arab Spring, right? Guy lights himself on fire. Starts the Arab Spring. There's a big movement that kind of is that comes out of that, right? There's been other examples of this. The lighting yourself on fire usually signifies, I think I'm starting something big. I'm telling you about the story on Tuesday. This occurred on Saturday.
Kind of a failure.
If you're gonna burn yourself alive,
yeah,
which
you
is
make
not
sure
a good
cameras
way to go,
there or something,
right? Like,
yeah,
you don't do it in the middle of the night and leave a manila envelope next to you.
Yeah. I'm going to say you shouldn't set yourself on fire.
Just blanket statement?
Yeah. Just don't do it.
Do you want to expound? Why?
No, I just think I'm just going to. I think it stands on its own. However, not in New York. In New York, everything is different. Some stories from New York, they don't even, no matter how big. Imagine if, let's say, your town. There was a lion. Was it a lion? A tiger. There was a tiger loose in your town. Do you think that would make big news? I mean, at least all of the... It'd be front page of the paper, don't you think?
Sure, probably.
Okay, New York Times. This is how crazy New York is. Tiger is loose in the streets of Manhattan. It's nowhere. It's not on the front page of the New York Times. Okay, helicopters were out because they had several residents call and say, there is a tiger loose on the streets of Manhattan. And it was a social media frenzy. But things are so crazy. This guy's setting himself on fire. Yeah. Tiger, we'll get to that. We're trying to put this guy out first. So it was happening. This tiger was loose between 166th Street in Harlem and St. Nicholas Avenue. It happens around 8:30 in the morning. And they, the fire department, everybody, I mean, who do you call? There's a tiger. Who do you call? Well, they call police. Who do the police call? They call the firemen. And the firemen don't have anybody else to call. They're like, oh, crap, I got to do this too. So they go out and they start searching for this tiger. Now, these people in Manhattan, you know, they've lived in the city all their life, but they're not idiots, right? Of course not. Firemen capture the tiger, and it is identified by
Tony.
No, by by the people who called police as the tiger that they had seen. It's a problem. Is it? it wasn't it. It was. It was. It's what we would call a raccoon. So. No, I mean, they're from the city. You can't expect them to be able to tell the difference between a tiger and a raccoon. I mean, come on.
That's a pretty large difference between...
I don't see it. They both have stripes.
It's true.
So, I mean, I've seen Tony the Tiger. He's as big. I mean, look how big he is. He can fit on your cereal box. I mean, that's how big tigers are.
No. That's not
pretty sure. That's
not,
right.
Not life size, and yeah. Tony.
This is not a normal. This is a normal size raccoon, by the way.
You may have lost sight. You lost touch with nature if you're living in New York. Yeah, I think is the lesson here.
Yeah, I think you might have lost touch with reality if you live in Manhattan and you think a tiger is raccoon, or you know, or it was just a really cute tiger. That would be a cute. That would actually no. That would just be a cat. So, let me tell you about Goldline. There's a couple of stories here that I pulled today for future shows that you should know about. Here's one. First domino falls in Illinois. I think it's Danville Pension. The Illinois comptroller intercepted the municipality tax revenues, more than 400 police and fire pension funds. 63% of Illinois' 651 total downstate public safety funds received less funding than was required from their cities. The first city has gone belly up here with their pension fund. More than 400 funds are to follow. Also, there's a story about how the dollar is falling, and this is a victory for Trump because it will mean more spending by other countries. Our trade imbalance will change. But what that means is your dollar is falling, which means if you left money in the bank, you're losing money every day because we're devaluing the dollar. So you have less purchasing power. People overseas, as their money goes up against the dollar, they can buy more of our stuff, but we can buy less. This is the game that's being played in Washington, and it can be spun, you know, any way you like. But the truth is, when the dollar loses value, you lose money and purchasing power. And that's when gold goes up. If I may suggest, please call Goldline, 1-866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com. Apparently, the administration is very thrilled. And so are some that are just looking at the trade imbalance saying, oh, this is great. The dollar is caving and the currencies all around the world are going up. No, that's not a good thing for you. It might be a good thing for the stats, but for you, it's not good. Call Goldline now. Hedge your bet. spread your risk out a bit and have some physical gold on hand. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So there's been a ruling in the Supreme Court, and it was split across party lines, well, except for one, voting with the now majority and making it the majority was Gorsuch, and it was on immigration, and the majority was the liberal side.
Kagan, Breyer, Sotomayor, Ginsburg, and Gorsuch voting together on an immigration law. I'm sure this isn't pissing Trump off today.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, the law basically says you get an automatic deportation if you commit a crime of violence. And the Gorsuch argument is essentially crime of violence is too vague. It's what is a crime of violence? You need to actually list exactly what you're punishing.
It's actually what I thought of when I first heard the story. I was like, what is a crime of violence? Is drunk driving a crime of violence or not? You know, what is it?
Right.
What's the threshold here?
And that's kind of the argument that Gorsuch makes, which I think does make some sense, though.
It's not going to make Trump's day.
Certainly not. And also, I mean, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, we're just skimming the basics of this case. I mean, I think there's an argument to be made that that can be true, though, you know, there's a separate dissent. There's several dissents and several opinions. Clarence Thomas writing one of them. I was reading an article yesterday about how the court has turned more to the left over the years. And they show a ranking of where these guys vote. And you see every one of them has these wild swings. You know, even Scalia was more conservative than where he was at the end. You see people like Kennedy, Stevens, who was actually started on the slightly conservative side and then went completely liberal. You look at the line of Clarence Thomas, it is always the most conservative and the most consistent. It shouldn't change, right? You shouldn't be going up and down on these scales. Your line should look like Clarence Thomas's line. And you know, it's hard to argue he's not the best justice.
You could be constitutional, which would sometimes put you into the social liberal category.
Possibly, yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, Clarence Thomas has gone through a wall of fire. He knows exactly who he was when he got in.
Glenn.
And he hasn't changed.
Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Have you noticed how many politicians don't know when it's time to call it quits? I mean, the career politicians, like 75-year-old Joe Biden. Guys like Joe cannot let it go. He is only surpassed by, I think, pro athletes and Hillary Clinton as to, you know, knowing when it's time to walk away. Apparently, out of work, Joe needs something to do because he was there Sunday, keeping his foot in the door for a 2020 presidential run by showing up on Al Sharpton's MSNBC show. I didn't know he even had one still, but apparently he does. And Joe Biden knew about it, or at least one of his advisors or somebody knew about it, had heard rumor that Al Sharpton had a show, and so he showed up. Biden's 8-year paid vacation as Obama's vice president apparently wasn't enough of a victory lap for this former senator from Delaware. He needs one more go-around. And I guess the prospect of a schoolyard rumble with President Trump is just too good to pass up. Part of me would like to see it. Part of me is two junkyard dogs going at it. There's part of me that says, yeah, let them fight. But old habits die hard for career politicians. If we concede that guys like Biden cannot let go of the limelight, couldn't it at least he make it interesting and try to be original? Because he's not doing that. He hasn't even officially announced his candidacy yet, but on Sharpton's show, he pulled out the same old tired party lines about Republicans trying to keep working class people and back black people down. You know, they don't want any black people voting for them. Listen to this.
You realize just this past year, in 24 states, the administration's allies have introduced 60 pieces of legislation, or maybe 70 pieces of legislation, to curtail the franchise. Look, that's what these guys are all about, man.
Yeah.
Man. These Republicans don't want working class people voting. They don't want black folks voting.
Man, voting? I mean, it's just like, hey, let's roll a doobie, man.
He's just a man of the people. He can't finish those G's. He's not going to get to the G in the word. No. It's voting. He doesn't have time for that. He's a man of the people.
Yeah, he's a man. Hey, man. All right, right on. Keep on trucking. I mean, he is. I just got to see him in his Keep on Trucking t-shirt from the 1970s, and I am set. Now, this particular line is frayed and full of holes. It doesn't even make sense, but, you know, that doesn't stop him from trotting it out. Man, all right. Are you the man? Of course Republicans want as many black people to vote as possible. They just want them to vote for Republicans. Funny how the same strategy applies regardless of race, isn't it? Can you vote? Yeah. Will you vote for us? Yeah. If Joe Biden really wants to keep score over which party has fought more for fundamental rights of black Americans, he's not really going to like the historical evidence all that much. But then again, it's on the Al Sharpton show. So evidence and truth doesn't matter. This is a guy who had to drop out of the race in 1988. He was running for president. He was caught plagiarizing speeches. Too many career politicians like Joe Biden. Too many of them just can't walk away. And it's amazing to me, the two biggest ones, Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, the truth plays no role in their life. They're living in a complete made-up world where the truth only matters when it's convenient.
It's Tuesday, April 17th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I read a great article on Medium the other day that I want to share parts of it with you. Because it is the problem and the solution. You know, we always just... We live in a world that is run by a pendulum, I think. You know, the deists during the early Enlightenment believed that there was a God. But he was a watchmaker, and he assembled the watch, and then he walked away. He set the time, started it going, and then he walks away from it. It's just running like, you know, clockwork. And that's the role that God plays. Well, let's use that analogy here for a second, because in some ways, it does work that way. The system does work that way. It's a clock, and it doesn't change, no matter how much you want it to change. You know, I need another hour. It doesn't matter. It just continues to tick. And 60 minutes is never rubber. It is always 60 minutes. And we as a society always are on a pendulum. And when we get too far on the outside, it's crazy unstable, and it's never good. It's when that pendulum is just right towards the 6 o'clock, if you will, right at the bottom, that it's the strongest and the best, right? Because there's these extremes where we are being pushed to those edges. And right now, the extreme is being pushed so far to the left. And it's so far to the collective that the individual doesn't matter anymore. It's all about the group, my group. And yet that group is getting smaller and smaller and smaller until you're going to eventually range, you know, right? You're going to land on the individual again. My group. Well, my group is Asian Americans. Well, not all Asian Americans. Asian Americans whose family has come here in the last two generations, but not just any last two generation Asian American. Asian American generation that migrated from China, and they came here because they were all missing one left foot. And eventually you get to just you and your case. Because if you noticed, they're all starting to eat each other now. I mean, when RuPaul is called out by transgendered people as being transphobic, you've got an issue. Okay, it's RuPaul, for the love of Pete.
So let me just share this Medium article. The biggest oversight of today's pro-diversity extremists is that they forget that literally diversity cannot be sustained without coexistence. Remember those bumper stickers that used to piss people off? Coexistence, like we're going to live together, coexistence, all of these one world religion. Yeah, coexistence is actually pretty important. You know, I don't mean I have to agree with you, but I pretty much have to live next door to you.
Seems like a pretty low hurdle to clear as well.
It really does.
You're just kind of both existing at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. We can't all have, you know, white, black, Asian, male, female, intersex, trans, gay, straight, cis, tall, short, fat, skinny, liberal, conservative, all living together exactly the same way. Because they're not, they're different people. And if they don't tolerate one another, what happens? They kill each other. This is the way you go to war. The article says, let me give you two types of people in this world. One, those who can tolerate people who don't think, look, live, or feel like them within the confines of the law. I'm that person. Or two, those who cannot tolerate who don't think, look, live, or feel like them within the confines of the law. But those are the only kind of two people. And if you're a number two person in any shape or form, then you are not pro-diversity. You're pro-self, you're pro-tribe, and it doesn't matter if you're black or white, gay or straight. It doesn't matter. You're not really diverse. The author says, let me put it this way. If black people resent and mock white people for their white privilege, and gay people resent and mock straight people for their privilege, and women resent and mock men for their privilege, and trans people resent and mock cis people for their privilege, and poor people resent and mock rich people for their privilege, submissive men resent and mock dominant men for their privilege, unattractive people resent and mock attractive people for their privilege, bald people resent and mock fully maimed people for their privilege, disabled people resent and mock able-bodied people for their privilege, liberals resent and mock conservatives for their privilege, vegetarians resent and mock meat eaters for their privilege, mm-hmm. vegans resent and mock vegetarians for their privilege, mm-hmm. Christians resent and mock Jews for their privileges, Muslims resent and mock Christians for their privilege, atheists resent and mock theists for their privilege, and Pentecostal Christians resent and mock Catholic Christians for their privilege, on and on and on and on. This is a recipe for conflict, not peace, not unity. This is what causes wars. Now, what happens is people will say, well, wait a minute here. You want me to live side by side with a racist? No. If they are actually promoting the idea of racial supremacy and the violent subjugation of people, well, no, you do resist those people. The sexists that believe they are superior and entitled to have power over another sex, no matter which of the 94 or 114 genders it may be, no. No, I resist those who make decisions based solely on gender. Homophobes, people that have believe that the lifestyle of gay people has to be exactly what you decide? No, I don't think we do that. Other than that, yeah, I think we all have to get along.
It's interesting. It's similar to what Amy Chua was saying yesterday on the show, in that we've come to a point where the people who claim to be diverse are so strident in their opposition to any other viewpoint. Diversity is a joke. I mean, even when you were reading that, when you were talking about diversity, you kind of cringe at the word, not because you cringe at the idea of actual diversity. Diversity is great.
Diversity
in real terms,
as
the word actually means from a dictionary, it's great. But what it is in political terms today is just a way to beat up on people who are too conservative.
Here's the thing. diversity makes you stronger. Okay? Real diversity makes you stronger. Do you know that there are some animals that are both and neither X nor Y chromosome, male or female?
Yeah.
Okay? And they can procreate. They can become a female or a male. Doesn't matter. They can play both.
It's creepy.
Right. It's creepy. However, they do that for survival. They actually physically change for survival. All right. But here's the problem. They clone themselves because they have nobody to mate with. So they clone themselves. And what happens? All of a sudden, there's this population explosion.
It's happening with crawfish in Europe.
Yeah,
now.
It's happening now. This explosion where everybody's like, we're going to be a world covered in crawfish. No, you're not. You know why? Because it's inherently weak. It will come against a predator, or it will come against a disease or something, and they will all die because one thing will kill all of them because there's no diversity. There's no genetic diversity. Whatever that one has, they all have it. Whatever the one weakness is, they all have it. We need diversity. We need genetic diversity, and we need mental diversity. I don't know anybody who's against that, except when you start talking politics, and then everybody seems to be against it. Guys, we need each other. We have to have each other. We have to live with each other. We have to stop trying to criminalize somebody else's point of view. There is a free speech survey that was just put out onto the university presidents, 471 college presidents. How do you value free speech? 82% of university presidents believe it is important to promote an inclusive society that is welcome to diverse groups. Although 85% said shouting down speakers or trying to prevent them from talking is never acceptable. And 74% said that protecting citizens' free speech rights is extremely important. 96% answered that they believe it's more important to allow students to be exposed to all types of speeches, even if they may find it offensive or biased, than to protect students by prohibiting speech they may find offensive or biased. 96% of all university presidents say that it is more important for them to be exposed to speech they may find offensive or biased. Why? First of all, because diversity makes you stronger. But if you happen to be a university president, I've seen what's going on in campuses. It doesn't match the 96% of you that are saying that you need to protect that. So I just want to say, how are things going? And blink twice if you're in danger. Now is prime time to sell your home. April 15th, August 15th is the big time of the year, and you want to get the right agent fast, and you want to get them first time. You pick the wrong agent and your house can just sit and sit and sit. Real Estate Agents I Trust. This is the place I want you to go. You can go and interview agents all you want, but I want you to make your last stop realestateagentsitrust.com. And I want you to meet the agent that is in your area that is ready to sell your home. We have over 1,000 agents all over America who are just like you. Their word is their bond, and they are fans of the show. They share your sensibilities. You know, they listen for exactly the same reason you do. They're trying to make sense of the world, and they want to live in a country that, you know, is fair and decent and honorable. That's what I like about these people. Now, that's the first step. They're all fully vetted for their knowledge, their skill, and their track record. They have to have a great track record of selling people's homes. Thousands of people all over the country have already put realestateagentsitrust.com to the test. The results are off the charts. If you want your home sold for the most money and the fastest possible, sell it on time, please. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Go there now. Realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So they're already in real time rewriting history, and it's the history that our kids are studying. If you're not reading the history books with your kids and going over their tests with them and talking to them every night, you shouldn't be surprised at the product that you get at the end of their schooling. NYU professor James Frazier is rewriting history, and he's making it a progressive narrative. He penned By the People, A History of the United States. It's a textbook for advanced placement American history high school class. And it's riddled with thinly veiled criticism of President Trump, blatant insults aimed at those who voted for him, and anti-police rhetoric. Now, I've read this, and some of this is really bad. Some of it is, I guess you have to take it as a whole, because some of it is like, I don't know, you could read it that way, I guess. But if you take it to if you look at it as a whole, it tips the scales. I mean, here's one of the really bad ones. Most thought, this is talking about the last election, most thought that Trump was too extreme a candidate to win the nomination. But his extremism, his anti-establishment rhetoric, and some said his not very hidden racism connected with a significant number of primary voters. Okay, well, who are the some? Some said. Who are the some? How many people said that? His not-so-hidden racist comments, his attitudes? I mean, I think that needs a little more explanation or needs to be left out.
Some is a nice way to say it's what I think.
Yes.
But I don't want to take responsibility for it, so I'll just reference random others that may have said something similar.
Now, he detests stereotyping, but listen to this. Trump supporters saw the vote as a victory for the people who, like themselves, had been forgotten in fast-changing America. Okay, I don't have a problem with that. Do you? Mostly older, often rural or suburban, and overwhelmingly white. Clinton supporters feared that the election had been determined by people who were afraid of rapidly developing ethnic diversity of the country, discomfort with their candidate's gender, and nostalgia for an earlier time in the nation's history. They also worried about the mental instability of the president-elect and the anger that he and his supporters brought to the nation. Holy cow! Why don't you just take Hillary Clinton's India speech?
Yeah, pretty much quoting it.
I mean,
almost.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. There's more in this, and I just want to share it with you and go over it, because you have to go over this with your kids. You have to go over this with your kids and to find a way to talk to your kids about this in a balanced way where they won't take the side of the teacher automatically. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So, reading this textbook that is now in classrooms called By the People, A History of the United States. It's a textbook for advanced placement American history high school classes. And by the way, do you know that now to get a history major, world history major, you don't have to take a single course in American history? Not one. Not one. How do you understand world history if you don't understand the United States? How do you understand if we don't have to take any world any American history to qualify as a history teacher, a world history teacher? How is that possible? Did the United States not play a role in anything that's happened in the last 220 years? Did we not play any role? How is that possible?
It's really the only important role to understand.
Correct.
Right? It's by far the most dynamic change.
Correct.
I mean, we tried things that no one had tried before.
We are now no longer teaching the founders. In fact, some school districts are now only teaching American history post-1900. Oh, what a surprise, because that's when the progressive era started. Isn't that interesting? History is written by those in power. And the good news is you have the ability to
teach history. It's being made every day to teach history to your kids. And it's imperative that you do. In this advanced placement textbook for high school, By the People is the name of the book. I gave you a couple of things. One is most thought that Trump was too extreme of a candidate to win the nomination. But his extremism, his anti-establishment rhetoric, and some said his not very hidden racism connected with a significant number of primary voters. So I would agree with, I'd say 90% of this. Most thought that Trump was an extreme candidate who couldn't win the nomination. I contend even Donald Trump's people didn't think he could win the nomination. But he went in as an extreme candidate to shake up the system. His anti-establishment rhetoric, yeah, that connected with a lot of people. Now, his extremism and his not very hidden racism, no. Did some people perceive some of the things he said as racist? Yeah, they did. Who are those people? I don't know. Do they exist? Yeah. In what number? I don't know. I mean, that shouldn't be in that textbook. That's not. You could say some people felt that he had hidden racist tendencies, as long as you say others vehemently denied that. He goes on. Clinton supporters feared the election had been determined by people who were afraid of a rapidly developing ethnic diversity of the country. Can we stop with this? I don't know a soul that is afraid of the country changing because there are all these black people here. I see brown people. No, nobody. I don't know of anybody that is feeling that way. I don't know anybody that is like, whites are going to be in the minority. We got to start killing me some of those other colored people.
You know, people in the media, you know, the Richard Spencers of the world who of think course. Things they, like that. They do exist.
They exist.
But they're in small numbers.
Here's what people are feeling. The American culture, the culture that we've had from the beginning of neighborliness, decency, honor, integrity, we've failed all of those things over and over again. But for the most part, you could predict America. You could predict what your neighbor would do. And we all generally agreed on the Bill of Rights. Even though we wouldn't live up to them all the time, we were always progressing and getting better. There's no finish line. And so we're always progressing and getting better. But generally, we all agreed on those things. Well, here's what I'm afraid of. And it has nothing to do with the color of skin. It does have something to do with people coming in from other countries. Let's say Sweden. Sweden. I don't want a bunch of Swedes in here that want to make America like Sweden. No, then live in Sweden. I want you to come here if you're like, you know, we had some really good things, you know, but it may not work here because it's diverse. There's no diversity in Sweden. Or what a surprise. As soon as we started introducing some sort of diversity, the whole thing started to shimmy apart. Huh. Wonder if that had anything to do with it. I don't want people here who want to recreate their country. I don't want people here who just want to be an American because you can become rich by the world's standards. I want people here who understand the opportunity that our Constitution provides. And that's what we're losing. But we're losing it with white people and black people and young people and old people. We're losing it everywhere. There's nobody generating those kind of people. And that's what I think people fear. And they saw Donald Trump as a guy who's like, I love the country. You say whatever you want. But he loves the country. I'm sorry. I don't think that was a universal opinion under Barack Obama. Now, you may not agree with Donald Trump's version of the country, but he loved it. And people want a president who's like, I'm on our side. That played to a lot of people. They felt that he loved the country. That's important. It has less to do with race. Then he goes on to say, afraid of rapidly developing ethnic diversity of the country or discomfort with their candidate's gender.
Look, it's not 1970 anymore, and Hillary Clinton is not Mary Tyler Moore. She's more like an angry mod. For the love of people, can you hippies stop living in the 1960s and 70s?
I mean, you did. You're the one that made the mod reference. I don't know that
because they'll understand it.
It's true, though. This idea that, I mean, is there someone out there in the sound of my voice that didn't vote for Hillary Clinton because she was a woman? Maybe. Never met anyone who's like that, but it's possible.
Okay, try this on for size. That's like me saying, you know that Melania hasn't been on magazine, fashion magazine covers?
Any.
No, she's been on one, but I don't remember which one it was. It wasn't a fashion magazine, but
she was on Vanity Fair Mexico.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't count because it's not American. Vanity Fair Mexico. She has not been on the cover of any women's magazine.
And think about the extensive propaganda we receive
of the arms.
You must believe Michelle Obama is beautiful. You must. She's on every fashion magazine. She's on magazine after magazine.
If you questioned her abs, you were a monster.
A monster. And then they put a supermodel in the White House, and she's on zero magazine covers.
I think that's because she's a woman, Stu.
That's as dumb a point.
Exactly
as
right.
They're making here.
It is the same point. It is so. If I said that with a straight face to the left, you're only doing that because she's a woman. You would roll your eyes, rightfully so, and say, that's ridiculous.
And you'd bring up the point. I liked when Michelle Obama was on fashion magazines. Like we'd say, well, we liked Carly Fiorina, but you would never give us any points for that.
No.
You would never say, remember who used to lead the polls? You know, a couple elections ago now, but Condoleezza Rice used to be the person they would talk about leading the polls
as
a potential candidate.
No problem with women. None. Stop it. Then he says, there was a nostalgia for an earlier time in the nation's history. Yeah, you know what? That's true of everybody. That's true of everybody because we all look back. The older you get, you look back and you're like, you know, it was simpler those days. No, it wasn't. It was simpler those days. Yeah, you had to pump your own water. You had to go outside and crap in a box. You had to wipe yourself with leaves. It was never better back then. It was never better back then. We have better things now. We have easier times now. We have connection around the planet like we've never, ever had. Yes, in your old-timey memories, you can be like, oh, I remember going down to the fruit cellar in Grandma's house and how wonderful. Grandma worked her ass off to pick all of that food, and then she spent all summer canning it, and every time she would look at you and say, hey, you know, got to go down and get some beans, you'd be like, why can't somebody else do it? Because you were freaked out about Grandma's basement because it was dark and spooky, not like most basements today. So please stop with it was better in the old days. It wasn't. And stop with this. Well, you know what we need to do? Let me tell you, I've got to. Do you know, I watched, who was that? What was that chick's name? Who? Bill Maher. Play Bill Maher. Bill Maher made this point on watching old movies and the hashtag Me Too. Listen to this.
A recent article by Molly Ringwald got a lot of attention because she revisited The Breakfast Club and her other 80s movies and found them troubling in the age of Me Too. She said she was taken aback by the scope of the ugliness. Oh, please, they were teen comedies, not snuff films. You can't blame someone for not being woke 30 years before woke was a thing. 20 years ago, the jokes on Friends were just funny. Now, some millennials, I applaud the sane ones, but some find the jokes sexist, transphobic, and fat-shaming. Okay, but if you spend your time combing through old TV shows to identify stuff that by today's standards looks bad, you're not woke, you're just a douchebag. We're never finished evolving. I hate to break it to you, but no matter how woke you think you are tolerating things right now that will make you cringe in 25 years.
Amen. Now, let me speak to all the douchebags. As Bill Maher has described and labeled those people who want to look back in time and be outraged by something that was said or done 20 years ago. Because I'm assuming that that douchebagginess continues beyond 20 years to perhaps 250 years to our founders, who definitely never, you could go up to them in the street and say, "You're not woke, man," and they wouldn't know what the hell you were talking about. Joe Biden could say, "Hey, dude, man, keep on trucking just without all the African Americans." Okay, he wouldn't understand that because he was in a different time. So if we can lecture Molly Ringwald about her evolving standards, maybe we can do the same with those who want to say, you know, those founding fathers, they were just evil. No, they were a product of their day, just like Molly Ringwald. Now, the difference is she's a woman, so I'm going to come down. Oh, no, wait. I'm applying the same standard to a woman that I am an old dead guy. Yeah, but he was white and a man. What happened there? I don't know. I'm so nostalgic for the good old days when right was right and wrong was wrong, and let's just go lynch him. What the hell is wrong with us?
This is the only show that will tie Molly Ringwald to the founders today.
And
I'm not
going to
get that anywhere else.
And I am thrilled to do it because it is the loss of American culture. Not white, not black, not male, female, cisgender, none of that. It's none of that. It is the loss that we all feel. Something's not right. I feel like our country is slipping through our fingers. Because what I'm watching on TV would not have been acceptable. And what's really, I would love for this guy to write, because he wrote, "Those who had long thought of a nation as a white and Christian country found it difficult to adjust to President Barack Obama." Really? Really? Because I don't think that's what it was. I think it was his policies. I think it was his communist ties. I think it was his constant insistence on saying that America was bad. And that you couldn't make it without government help. I think that's what it was. But what's weird is the Tea Party didn't march on inaugural weekend. We didn't do that. That was the Democrats that seemed to have a problem with something beyond his policies, and they can't let it go. And I think the textbook for American history should end this chapter on what's strange is half the country felt the way under Barack Obama that the other half would soon feel after the election of Donald Trump. Yet with so much in common, neither side was woke enough to see that. So some really exciting news for our friends at Simply Safe. 2 weeks ago, Simply Safe won a couple of awards, and they're big ones. They won the Editor's Choice Award from CNET Magazine, from PC Magazine, and from Wirecutter. These three respected product testers all went and tested all of the products for home systems. And through a battery of tests, they compared it to all the other home security products. And Simply Safe came out and won every single time. The Editor's Choice Award. I have been telling you about Simply Safe for years. In my opinion, it's the best home security system, hands down, you can buy. And especially when you look at the price. When you add in the price, what are you doing? You're going to save so much money. You own the system. And there's no strings attached, no contracts. It's $15 a month for the security that's being monitored 24/7. So go to simplysafebeck.com. Find out yourself why people are raving about it. Simplysafebeck.com. Take an extra 10% off at simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Beck.
President Trump resumes war of words with California and the governor, Jerry Brown. I don't think I have a problem with that one. Do you? I mean, I think we can kick California's ass.
If you're going to yell at someone.
Yeah.
You know, the governor of California.
If you're going to go to war with somebody, maybe it is California. You know?
Really?
I'm just saying, maybe it is California. Forget Syria. Let's think about California.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.